Hello there, I'm Miranda Gretton, and this is Take a Moment with NCHC, the show where we talk to you and your colleagues about experiences that affect you. Listen on your drive between patients or in your downtime, whenever you get the chance to take a moment.
Hi, I'm Bex Buss. I'm a learning and development consultant for the Trust.
Hi, and I'm Ian Bell. I'm head of service for the Adult Community Learning Disability Service.
Ian and I are trained mental health first aiders as well as mental health first aid instructors.
So today we're going to be talking about mental health first aiders. Now, I know, and I'm sure everyone listening knows what a first aider is. You know, you hurt yourself, you call the first aider at work and they come and bring you the medical box. But what does it mean in terms of mental health first aider? What actually does that term mean?
I would say it's similar in principle to physical first aid. So physical first aid is kind of two things. It's when something happens and you don't need professional help. So it might be you fall and you get a bruise, or you graze your knee, or a small cut, and you may need some assistance, but you don't need to go to the GP or to accident and emergency or anything else. But it's also where something happens where professional help isn't available immediately, but probably is needed. So an example would be somebody collapses in the street. There's never going to be, very unlikely to be, a paramedic or an ambulance immediately there. So as a physical first aider, you might go in and assess and do something to intervene whilst you wait for professional help to arrive. So mental health first aid is exactly the same. So you might have the equivalent of the grazed knee. So you might have low mood or some low level anxiety that you don't need necessarily professional help, but actually some support from a colleague with mental health first aid training would be really supportive and help that person without that needing the professional help. But equally, you could be there when somebody is in crisis, you intervene, you offer that support, whilst you might be calling 999 and asking for further support if somebody is in immediate sort of risk of harm to themselves or to somebody else. So the parallels are very clear for me.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. And I love that you were talking about that low level stuff, because I think that feels the difference for me between physical and mental health first aid. You probably wouldn't go to a first aider if you just needed a plaster. You'd have one in your purse or your desk. And yet from a mental health first aid perspective, we'd absolutely want you to, if you were noticing, as you say, that lower mood or that low level anxiety, to actually talk to a mental health first aider about it. So it feels a much earlier support mechanism. And I could hear, as Ian was describing those crisis situations, absolutely, when we train you as a mental health first aider, you will have the knowledge and the skills and some level of confidence to deal with those situations. They are rare. So in terms of proportion, we're probably talking about 10%, maybe even less than that, of the calls or the conversations you will have are at that crisis end. The vast majority is at that much lower level end. And even more, there's something about our role as mental health first aiders is actually to start those conversations about mental health even before somebody is experiencing a deterioration in theirs. It's to make it much more normal conversation. One of the things that we talk about in the course is this stigma that brilliantly is reducing around mental health, but historically is still there a little bit. So the more conversations we can have about mental health and how common and normal it is, the better we can be as mental health first aiders.
That's really interesting. And we're going to come on and talk about the responsibilities of becoming a mental health first aider in a little while. But before we do, let's talk a bit more about the people who might use the services. So you said those low level mental health sort of crises almost. And how do I find somebody? You know, if I am having one of those moments and I'm thinking I need to talk to someone, but like you say, I don't need that huge intervention of maybe therapy. I would just like to talk to somebody. Where do I go? What's the starting point to find a mental health first aider in the Trust?
So there's a number of places you could go. I would hope, as I think we've got over 100 mental health first aiders in the Trust already, and we're aiming for a 1 in 10 across the Trust, so we're looking to recruit many more, that if you've got a local mental health first aider, they would have already made their team and people around them aware that that's one of the roles that they play. Sometimes, though, regardless of how you're feeling as an individual, you might not want to talk to somebody that you know. That feels a bit uncomfortable. So if you want to go outside your local mental health first aid, if you search mental health first aid on the Loop, there is a list of all of the mental health first aiders that are trained in the trust. It is shown by place. So you can either very deliberately choose somebody maybe you don't know but close to you, or you can choose somebody who's completely the other side of the county or completely in another service that you would never come across in any other way, if that makes you feel more comfortable to have that conversation. I guess there is something around remembering that as mental health first aiders, we all do this in addition to our day job. And whilst as a mental health first aider, you would be trained to deal with crisis, we are not a crisis service. So it's likely that that first contact will be more about when can we have a conversation at a time and in a place that is comfortable and works for both of us, rather than I desperately need you right now. That's not to say you can't ask that question, but just in terms of for your own mental health, I wouldn't want you to be waiting till you feel you're in crisis before you contact somebody. Absolutely, that early contact is really useful.
So you can just phone somebody up. It's that simple.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Let's move then from the person needing the help to the person offering the help. Now, personally, I don't know if I could do it. I'm interested to hear from you both. Like, it sounds to me a little bit intimidating, a bit daunting, and I wonder whether it would to others as well. So tell me a bit more about the role. You said, obviously, you are trained and you have a certain level of skills that you're taught. How can you equip people to deal with someone else's mental health?
I think the first thing to say, and it's very clear in the training, is there's a big difference and a difference in expectation that we're not training people to be professionals. We're not treating people to be therapists. So I guess coming back to the physical first aid, you don't kind of get that question. So you do your first aid training, but no one says, oh, am I expected to be a paramedic now? You kind of know that, you know, you've got some skills, but there's a very much a beginning and an end. And that's where the professionals. And it is, I guess it is slightly grayer with a mental health than it is with physical health about where that kind of point would be. But I think for me, that the awareness that we give people in the mental health first aid training is around recognizing different mental health conditions, some that people will be familiar with in name and maybe in some detail. Anxiety might be a good example, a mental health condition that's relatively common. But often there are misconceptions and there's stigma and discrimination based on misunderstanding. So we can clarify, if you like, well, what is anxiety? What would that kind of present like? And then within the mental health first aid training, there's a very clear structure around how you would proceed in terms of that approach that you would make to somebody or they would approach you, how you would assess, how you would assist if there was a crisis. And then looking at skills, I think, that most people have around listening and communicating non-judgmentally, about giving information and support. And we emphasize that we don't give advice, which is a key part of the training. And then it's about encouraging people to seek either professional help, if that's potentially necessary, and or support from other people, friends, family, might be other kind of informal. So that once you understand that process, which is called ALGI, and we'd go through that in the training, it gives that structure that I think then gives people that confidence that, I'm not being trained to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist or a cognitive behavioural therapist. But you're right, Miranda, that I think because mental health isn't spoken about and maybe is understood as physical health, there is that maybe anxiety that people have thinking about becoming a mental health first aider. And that's why I think people like myself and Bex, we're happy to have conversations with people who are interested to explain that, to say, no, you're not going to be held to account as a professional for any support that you might give somebody.
Absolutely. And I think quite often whenever we're talking to a friend, say, who's having an issue or a situation, and we often go into fix it mode, don't we? We think, oh, I need to help this person. I need to get them better. And that's not what this is. When you said there about not giving people advice, and in a way that almost absolves you of having to fix the problem, doesn't it? So therefore you are just sort of more of a listening ear. And I was going to ask if you should consider if you're a certain type of person or not to be able to be a mental health first aider, or can anybody do it?
I suspect there is certain people that would find it easier, being naturally more skilled at it. And I would imagine that, bearing in mind we work for a healthcare organisation, the vast majority of the people that work for NCHC are coming from a caring, empathetic position. And I think when I think about ALGI, the structure that Ian talked about that we share with people, probably the most important element is that listen and communicate non-judgmentally. There is something so precious about creating the space for somebody just to talk really openly, not to have to edit what they say, not to have to worry about being judged, to genuinely felt heard, is probably the most powerful thing we do. And bizarrely, a lot of the information we share with people, almost they never use. Now that sounds weird, I can hear myself saying that. And the reason I say that is because what we will share with people is all of the other sources of support. When Ian was talking about recognizing certain mental health conditions, we will give them all of that information. But in a way, that's almost just their comfort blanket, which enables them just to be and to listen and be curious. And sometimes just the questions that we ask enable people to process their situation in a different way. So actually they can make so much progress on their own. That sense of this is normal, this is okay, this is not going to be forever, I can deal with this, recover from this, from the vast majority of things, it's just really important. So I think those worries about being a mental health first aider are often overdone. The reality is very different and a lot closer, as Ian was saying, to what you do on a day-to-day basis with any colleague or patient.
Even the bit, if you just took the very beginning of mental health first aid approach, immediately you have to be creative. You have to think, I can see Miranda is struggling with her mental health. There might be things that I've noticed in terms of your appearance might have changed. Very subtle things. It might be that your work has changed, or maybe not hitting the deadlines that you were a couple of weeks ago. And I'd think, okay, be curious. I wonder what's happening for Miranda. And if we're in an office full of people, it's probably not the right time to come up to you and start a conversation. So that creative bit and that compassion is, well, when's a good time? Well, I know Miranda goes and has a lunch on her own, and that's often a very quiet time. I wonder if I could go and have a conversation there.
Let's say I'm a mental health first aider and I'm really busy at work. I'm feeling a bit stressed myself. I'm getting a bit burnt out. I did the training a few months ago and things have sort of slightly different in my life now. Maybe something's happened in my personal life or work is just a bit crazy. And then I get a crisis phone call. I get somebody who calls me and they are in crisis and I am not particularly feeling that strong at the moment. Is there support in place for the mental health first aiders themselves to be able to sort of deal with those calls from people if they're not necessarily feeling that strong themselves in that moment? What kind of support is in place for people if that does happen?
So absolutely, we provide support on an ongoing basis and connect people with each other. I guess in terms of the question, I'd be thinking more about, I would hope as a trained mental health first aider, you would recognise your own situation and be doing something about it and getting, because you're equally as valued in getting the support as a mental health first aider as well as giving it. And I think there's some real honesty around, I'm not in a good place myself at the moment. Tell me a bit more what's going on for you. I will talk to one of my mental health first aid colleagues, and we have a channel in Teams that every single trained mental health first aider is a member of. So every mental health first aider has access to all the others. That if that person is not able to deal with that crisis situation, then I think it's a really good role modeling of mental health and good mental health practice to say, I'm not in a great place myself today because of the situation I'm in. What I will do is help you find somebody who can give you the help that you need right now.
It's a network, isn't it? And that's the thing I think you need to be aware of if you are thinking of signing up, is that you are absolutely part of a network of people who are there to support each other, aren't you?
Absolutely. And Bex and I will both say that, you know, if people want to or need to contact us, then they can do so. And we can't obviously, you know, give guarantees in terms of, you know, being available all of the time. But in the absence of us, like you said, there are, how many did you say, Bex, 100 people trained?
Yeah, over 100 now, I think.
Yeah. And so the people who are trained, most people, I guess, will remember who was on the course with them. But with the supervision group, you're then having awareness and interactions with other people who've been trained, but not necessarily on the same course as you. So that network kind of grows every time you get to know those. And there might be people that you work with who you didn't know had done the training. I mean, ideally, in a perfect world, people would go back and they would tell everyone that they are. I'm sure that doesn't always happen. So that growing network of mental health first aiders creates that ongoing support, as well as ad hoc support, where I might get a Teams chat or a call from somebody asking for some support. So yeah, it's a very supportive network.
We have a structured process. So Ian alluded to it. 4 times a year, all of the mental health first aiders are invited to a group supervision session. So sometimes we just get people to work in smaller groups and talk about mental health first aid situations they've dealt with and what worked and what didn't and what they've learned from it. Sometimes we will use a resource that we use for the training or another video that we found elsewhere as a sense of discussion. So as a mental health first aider, once you've done your initial 2 days training, there is an expectation that you will attend at least 2 of those, because we recognise people have annual leave and they have other work pressures. But that, as you were saying, Miranda, that sense of connection, that sense of network is really important. And in the same way as people know where to go if somebody who contacts them is in a crisis, as individuals, they can make that call if they feel they're in crisis too. But also, if they get that crisis call, they know where they can signpost somebody to get them the support that they need in that moment. So much rarer the crisis situations, but there are, that's one of the things you will receive on your training. Where do I go? So things like NSFT have a crisis team. There is that key support out there when we need it.
And you don't need to be a clinical professional to be a mental health first aider. You can be from the support services side as well, the corporate side as well, can't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've had a real mix of people come through. And, you know, if we didn't know the roles that people did coming into it, I'm quite sure, you know, 9 times out of 10, I would have no idea whether somebody was a clinician or had a non-clinical role within the trust, because actually it's kind of your core values. And that's irrespective of any clinical training.
It is absolutely not just a clinical role. It's for every single member of staff. And that's whether it's with a colleague or with a patient or with a service user. And of course, it will apply in your outside life too. You will have conversations with friends or family members who you might start to recognise some stuff going on because of the training you've had. And again, it's just an opportunity to be curious and ask some questions and really, really listen.
If someone's listening to this and thinking, I would like to sign up, firstly, how do you sign up? But secondly, just give us an idea of how much it will take out of someone's day, week, month, you know, in terms of commitment.
Okay, so from the initial interest, they will be asked to complete an expression of interest form, which will probably take them 20 minutes, half an hour to think about what is it that they bring to mental health first aid, what is it they're looking to get from it. So we get a bit of a sense of them and their intentions and their experience, and helps them really think through, is this something that I want to do? Because I think it is a considered decision. And I think sometimes people feel really nervous about it. They kind of think, I'd quite like to, but oh, I don't know. And you know what? I think that nervousness is a real positive thing. And I'd say, thank you for acknowledging it if that's how you're feeling. And that probably demonstrates you've got a really good level of self-awareness and emotional intelligence that will support you in being a really good mental health first aider. So the training itself is 2 days, and they are quite full on, I think 9 to 5, 2 days in a row. And then beyond that, as we know, there's the quarterly supervision. They're an hour long, so as many mental health first aiders will want to come. So that's potentially another, if you did all of them, 4 hours in the year. And then the calls that you get. The sense I'm getting is we don't get that many, which is the reason, and I think it's even more beneficial to be noticing the people around you and having those ad hoc conversations, which you probably would be doing with colleagues anyway. So in terms of time, not a huge amount beyond that.
So if you've got that skills of being a good listener and you're compassionate and you care about people, you are fitting the brief for a mental health first aid. And what we can give you on top of that is maybe some confidence, some information around different mental health conditions. And then you apply those with the compassion and that interest you have in supporting and helping people and being a good colleague. It just enhances what you're probably already doing.
If you're nervous and anxious, A, talk to any of the existing mental health first aiders or Ian and I about what's involved. And then if you want to take it the next step, come along to the 2 days training and then see how you feel at the end of it. You'd be so welcome.
Thank you for listening to Take a Moment with NCHC. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please visit the podcast intranet page to leave a comment and for details of our other episodes. You can also follow NCHC on all social media channels.